Rarely in life do we see a thing straight through from start to finish. Someone a couple of rows ahead of you in a theater stands up to leave the room, momentarily blocking your view of the screen. Before initiating a lane change while driving, you check your blind spot only to realize that the groceries you tossed in the back seat completely obscure your view of the next lane. In the middle of completing a project at work, your supervisor directs you to assist a coworker with a more time-sensitive task. For certain aspects of life, we can hit the pause and rewind button, or the time we lost may appear to be irrelevant to the overall picture of our lives. But in many respects, we live fragmented existences, not unlike a David Mamet movie in which we're constantly entering a scene too late and then having to leave too early. There are always gaps, there are always distractions. There's always an obstacle, whether it be mental, emotional, or physical, that obscures our view. And often we lack the necessary contextual information or specific knowledge to clearly interpret the scene unfolding before us. Despite all of this, I do believe that life flows seamlessly from one scene to the next. At the same time, I also believe that it seldom flows in a predictable and linear fashion. So those gaps, or quote-unquote jump cuts, can be a real problem when trying to nail down the honest-to-God truth of a thing. When a friend recently asked me for tips and advice about birding, my initial response was, look long and close and question everything you see. I also, of course, recommended a list of books, websites, and other resources that I find useful, but the bottom line is that learning to make objective observations is the most critical factor in accurately identifying a species. The adrenaline that floods your system when seeing or experiencing something new can cause mental and emotional distractions. Then there's the time factor. For just how long did you see that bird, for example? 3 minutes, 3 seconds, or 0.3 of a second? What about your field of view? Did you see a complete profile of the bird, or was it facing away from you and hidden by the branches and leaves of the tree on which it was perched? Most of the birds I observe that aren't of a common variety, I only see for a fleeting moment. Often, that time frame is less than a second as they fly away, or the bird in question invariably disappears into the forest's understory at the same moment my eyes focus on it. Very frustrating, but a challenge in which I usually find a joy to accept. The myriad factors that conspire to confuse and confound us when birdwatching are ever present in life. For example, some time ago I reported to the sheriff's department an illegally parked RV in the forest near my home. Running errands before work, I saw the offending vehicle tucked back in the trees on a newer hiking and biking path. Bold, I thought, since it's illegal to camp anywhere other than at designated campsites in the Lake Tahoe Basin. There's open space everywhere in Tahoe, so it seems like it would be no big deal to pitch your tent wherever you wanted. But you can imagine the environmental impacts that would result from tons of people camping on every undeveloped plot of land in Tahoe all summer long. Needless to say, illegal campers or poachers are a huge pet peeve of mine. Their presence introduces the idea that the behavior is acceptable, causing more people to follow suit. Litter attracts more litter and all that. Anyway, I called in the description of the RV, which is to say that it was a beat-up metallic gray monstrosity with blacked-out windows. It reminded me of an old neglected Airstream that had seen too many miles, and its roof looked like it had been hammered by one too many hailstorms. I drove past that RV on one of the only sections of road in the Tahoe Basin that features a speed limit of 55 miles an hour, so I just saw it out of the corner of my eye at a relatively high speed, and I only saw it for a second or two. But there was nothing else that it could be in that location, I thought. The sheriff's deputy called me back not too long after for clarification on the location, so I provided additional details and then let it go. When I passed by the scene 25 minutes later, however, the RV remained in place and there was no sign of law enforcement anywhere. Weird, I thought. Days later, I drove past the same location only to see that same RV still parked in the forest. At that point, I had to scratch the itch. So I parked my Jeep and took a walk. Lo and behold, it only took me 5 seconds, which was about 3 seconds more than my other sightings, to realize my error. The quote-unquote RV was nothing more than a crumbly old concrete foundation that had been spray-painted a metallic gray. And it was approximately 8 to 9 a.m. each time I saw that RV, so the rising sun hit that shiny paint in a way that caused it to look identical to the polished aluminum of a classic Airstream. There were also horizontal black painted stripes that looked exactly like those windows I had described to the deputy. What an idiot, I thought. I promptly called the sheriff's department to request that dispatch apologize for me to the responding deputy. Dispatch chuckled and said, Okay, I'll let her know. One important lesson I've learned through my mother's decade-long research as a citizen advocate for six wrongfully convicted men in Wisconsin is, eyewitness testimony is often the most unreliable evidence presented in court cases. What our minds interpret based on what our eyes see is often at odds with what's actually in front of us. Again, if we don't keep in check all those internal factors and compensate for the external ones, they'll lead us astray. Just consider my example of the mysterious RV. There are multiple external factors, such as time viewed, which was directly related to my vehicle's speed, and the fact that the object in question was partially blocked by trees. Also, my bias against illegal campers played a critical role in my misidentification because, like I said, what else could it have been? So I have to keep all of this in mind as I continue to develop my skills as a naturalist, because after all, the core principle of naturalism is the emphasis of studying the natural world and its relationships using observational methods rather than experimental. I used to be quick to identify common species because I learned their names from various people over the years. But lately I've been considering the credentials of those people. Are they botanists, ornithologists, or experts of local and regional flora and fauna? Or are they just like me and have learned those common names from someone else who's passed down their quote-unquote knowledge, yet not actually confirming the ID for themselves? Obviously, we can't spend all of our time learning firsthand about this, that, and the other thing. I'm not going to build myself a rocket ship and fly into space just to confirm whether or not the Earth is actually round. We obviously have to place our trust in other people as well as take some things on good faith, but in this day and age of information sharing, it's easy to find reliable resources to help us on our way. I'm not trying to criticize anyone, especially since I've been as guilty as anyone for passing along bum scoop due to my own ignorance. However, through my focus on nature these past couple of years, I'm realizing that the more I look, the more I find, and the more I find, the more I discover just how little I actually know. So even when I think a sure thing is a sure thing, I still try to look a little longer and a little closer, and I question everything I see.